Move the World is partnering with the Readiness Lab, the home for podcasts, webinars, and training in the field of emergency and disaster services. I'm George Siegel, and this is the Move the World podcast. Every week, we feature interviews with people dedicated to making the world a better place. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this week's Move the World podcast. Every week, I try to introduce you to someone who in their life or in their job is doing something to make the world a better place. Today, we are going to talk about how important grandparents are to grandchildren and the difference that that can make in the children's lives. My guest today is Gramps Jeffrey. When does a toddler start to learn right from wrong? What happens in a family that influences a decision going through a young mind? Gramps Jeffrey's book, I Don't Want to Turn Three, explores the interaction between family that is happening in just about every household in the world. Gramps, welcome.
I appreciate you inviting me. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, glad to have you on. So tell me, what do you do to move the world?
You know, it kind of got into writing is what I'm starting to do to move the world. And that started when I was in college. You know, a friend of mine and I took a 11-week backpack trip through Europe. And, you know, we did the great things with the backpack, with, you know, sleeping in youth hostels and taking the train and hitchhiking and things like that. But I kept a journal and I kept it every single day. And, you know, I put it away. And about 10 years later, my friend called me. He says, have you looked at your journal lately? And I said, no. He said, you should look at it. It's unbelievable. So I went back and took a look at what I had written. I said, I got to be a writer one day. Because I started off like many other people my age, went into business. I went into the retail business. And I was in retail and wholesale. And I grew a business, an internet business and so forth. And so I decided that I was really going to start to write. So my first book is a book called The Secrets of Retailing, How to Beat Walmart. And I wrote this book when I was, I'd started a website that became the premier business-to-business site on the internet where we sold in case quantity to small businesses all around the world, shipped in all 50 states and around 45 different countries. So basically, our customer base were the moms and the pops who were surviving and thriving as the chains. So I wrote a book on how to open up a business. It was written for entrepreneurs and small business owners, and it's a step-by-step guide how to do that. So I started that book. I went out, and Arianna Huffington wrote it from the Huffington Post, read it, and asked me to become a contributor to the Huffington Post. So I've written over 100 articles for the Huffington Post on all kinds of subjects like small businesses, entrepreneurship, but more importantly, on all kinds of nonprofit things like the homeless and the elderly and children and schools. And that was driven because our business evolved where half the business starting to support nonprofits who are buying from us to stretch their dollars to help more people. So I finally, I retired from my business and then COVID hit. You know, and living this past year because of the pandemic caused by COVID, you know, in isolation, except with being with my family, that gave me a special time to kind of watch and interact with all my grandkids. And I got to tell you what a trip that was, because all six of these grandkids have completely different personalities. The ones that have the thing that they have in common is a sense of curiosity and how they accomplish things. So watching them grow year to year and how they interact really was the basis for this book. I've always wondered how is when I was 3 years old different than when they are 3 years old. So that is how I am working on changing the world, is how do I make grandparents? And this book really was geared for grandparents to read to their children. How do you get more grandparents in the baby boomer generation, which I'm in? You know, how do you get them more involved in your kids? And that's my mission right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have older kids and younger kids. And so the older kids got to spend some time around my parents who have since passed on. And the younger ones don't get that. And I really think they've missed out on something. It's such a special bond. I mean, probably the strongest relationship I've had with any family member was my grandmother growing up. And I think it can be very powerful. Now, your book, I Don't Want to Turn Three. I didn't want to turn three either. So I read the book. And what was your thought process in writing it? I see the message that that the lesson that Jordan learns as he goes through the story. So what were you hoping to tell with that?
Well, you know, it comes down to, at what age do we begin to take responsibility for our actions? Is it 3 years old? Is it 13 years old? Is it 23? In my generation, I'm seeing plenty of 63-year-olds that still don't take responsibility for their actions. Sure. So, you know, that's really the heart of the book is, you know, when is it that you start to take your own responsibilities? And when do kids really learn the difference between me and us?
Yeah, when I was reading it, I was going, wow, this Jordan's going to have a problem. This guy's going to be a pickpocket when he goes gets older, because he liked to take things. And it didn't seem malicious. What do you think? He was just a curious kid. He just wanted, I know kids do that all the time. They see something at a friend's house and it happens to make it back to your house. Had you had any experience with that?
Yeah. And what's so interesting is, you know, Jordan has now turned 3 and he's working on his way to be 4, but I've got another one that's 2 turning 3 and they're going through the same thing. They are going through, you know, taking things that don't belong to them. And it's an evolution. And I just think that happens. That's part of, it's happening in every family. I mean, it happened to my family and I wrote about it, but you know, it happens in every family. This book is a true story. It really is how these kids reacted and how the oldest one kind of gave them direction on how, what they should do to really be a better family. You know, the whole book is based on pictures that I took exactly actually going on. And then I sent it to the illustrator and she kind of made it more cartoonish, but this is a true story. And I'm telling you, it's happening again. I'm going to my granddaughter's 3rd birthday party this weekend, and I'm expecting to see the same thing.
A collection of other people's stuff in her room. So spoiler alert, we'll give away the ending where, you know, they catch Jordan with everybody's toys. It's all been discovered. The cure at the end, I know I had talked to you about it. I said, hey, Gramps, I'm not so sure I like the ending, because if I was one of those kids, I don't know that I would have been so cool about ponying up my stuff to give away as well. The lesson is they donate everything. And in your true story, did the other kids feel good about that? Or were they like, hey, I didn't do anything. Why should I lose my toys?
The other kids, the older they were, the better they understood this. Okay. The littler they were, the 2 and 3 year olds and the 1.5 year old, kind of, they had to go along because their older cousin says, we're going to do this. So I think it comes over time, but you know, it really emphasizes how we're influenced by the people that we surround ourselves with. So the older, the 6 and 9 year old convinced the younger ones that, you know, this is the right thing. We've got stuff and these other kids don't, you know, we need to share. And so they just went along with it because their older cousin says, this is what we're going to do.
And I guess the best part is Jordan had to give up his birthday presents too. So I was thinking, hey, Jordan's kind of sliding by here, just giving away other people's stuff, but he probably gave away the newest, most recent stuff. He had to give away his new toys.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that really hit home with him. You know, when the great thing was all 6 of them, we went down to the donation together and they actually handed over the toys. And in our case, it was the fire station here in town because they were doing the toy drive. So we got all 6 of them. We put them into the cars and they actually handed over the toys. The reaction afterwards was really the priceless. Was even Jordan said, yeah, I think I did the right thing.
That's good. It's good when you feel like they've actually learned a lesson. I wrote a book about my 14-year-old son when he was little called I Hate That, because he hated everything. Now, I didn't sell a lot of these books. I didn't know how to market it. But I enjoyed writing it because it's true. He hated everything. And that was just first, anything we do, I hate that. I hate that. I hate that. So a lot of parents probably think, yeah, I've got a book out of this. Once you have an idea like that, how do you then take it to the next level? I mean, you've been writing for a long time, so obviously you have connections to do it, but it's not easy to get a book out there and to get people to actually buy it.
No, you're right. There are hundreds and hundreds of books. Now, there happen to be, you know, some great books out there, but you're in competition all the time. So you've got to make go after the targeted audiences. You know, like in my case, my target audience are grandparents. You know, I think about when I was a kid. You know, my uncle lived up the street. My grandmother lived two blocks away. And we had a real family going together to pull us together. But in today's world, that just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, in my case, I've got two of the grandkids live with their parents here in Scottsdale, but two live in Austin, Texas, and two live in Orlando, Florida. So, you know, how do you keep in contact? How do you, as grandparents, really influence, you know, what they're going to do? Because, you know, the kids don't reach out to you. You've got to reach out to them. So you've got to kind of come up with ways that would trigger the interaction of grandparents to keeping in touch. Because, you know, in my generation, the baby boomers, a lot of grandparents involved, but there are plenty of us that say, hey, I raised my kids. It's their business. You know, they'll take care of the grandkids. I don't need to worry about them. So, you know, what we did in order to keep in contact with the kids in the other states is, for some reason, these 2 and 3 and 4 year old kids love dinosaurs. I don't know why, but they all are experts on dinosaurs. Every one of them can tell me, you know, what the name of a dinosaur is, whether they eat meat or they don't. As far as I'm concerned, they're small, medium, and large dinosaurs. They tell me all this stuff. So in order to connect with our kids, and again, I'm talking to grandparents, how do you connect with your little kids, is we decided that for the ones that weren't here in town, that we were going to take our 6 little dinosaurs and every night put them someplace different in the house. So like, for instance, one night they were in the refrigerator eating blueberries. The next night they were at the sink helping grandma wash the dishes with soap on their noses. The next night they were playing the piano. Another night they were walking up the steps. So we developed a whole program where we had 50 different nights that these dinosaurs are doing things. So what happened, again, because we hit on a spot where all these little kids love, that all of a sudden, every night, our kids from Austin and Orlando were calling us, and they would call my wife's iPhone because of FaceTime, and they would say, where's Gramps? Where's Gramps? And so we need to find out what the dinosaurs are doing tonight. So that helped us connect as grandparents to these little kids, even though they're thousands of miles away. I would just urge your listeners to think through, you know, if your kids are not down the street, because you got to be involved with your little kids, because you can make an influence, much like you said your grandmother was your major influence, that you figure out something that will relate to the kids, have them call you. Because again, most kids won't call you. You've got to call them.
Yeah, there's a lot of different styles of being a grandparent, I imagine. I mean, I'm not that excited about ever wanting to be one just because I have 5 kids and, you know, I'm okay now just not having to deal with that. I don't want to raise somebody else's kids. But that role, it's like, how do you find your place in that role? Especially if you think your kids aren't doing a great job. So hopefully you raise good kids that are having good kids. But I've dealt with different grandparenting styles from different situations where they are preachy, or they can be demanding, or they can just be the cool grandparent. They can throw a lesson in there when it's needed. How do you find your way as a grandparent so you don't end up with a bad relationship? Because you really don't want kids being afraid of grandpa.
Well, I am sure you can remember things that happened in your childhood when you were 6 years old that you still remember. Sometimes it's always the great things. Sometimes it's not the great thing. It's the bad things. So you got to... Grandparents are there to support their children. They're not there to be the great parent. You know, the great thing about grandparenting is you can be with them and give them back. So you don't have to worry about that. You know, but the kids really remember. So you have to have that influence. Like, for instance, we had the 2 here in town staying with us a couple weekends ago. And we decided we're going to have fun. So we did all the good stuff. You know, we played video games. We took them to the park. You know, we're in Arizona. We went swimming. You know, we went to the museum. We did all the great things that you want to make sure that they have the memories, you know, when they're our age, and say, yeah, I remember my grandparents did that. But my wife for dinner said to Levi, who's 6 years old, she said, you are going to eat this. You're going to try this. And he says, but I don't like it. She said, if you don't try it, you're not watching TV tonight. So, you know, she forced him to eat something. Well, when we gave the kids back to their parents, you know, Olivia said, oh, we had a great time. We went to the park. We went swimming. You know, the only thing Levi said was, Grandma made me eat something I don't want to eat. And that's going to be his memory. That's going to be his memory when he's our age of what grandma left us. So to answer your question a little different way, the best thing I think that grandparents can do with children or grandparents is read them a book, help them participate in reading. Okay, you know, again, there's 100 great kids' books out there. Mine happens to be one of them, but there's plenty of others to read. So, you know, think about what is it that benefits a child, you know, when they're reading a book? Well, the first thing it does as a grandparent, it helps you bond with them. Okay, it gives you that quiet time where, you know, you're going to sit down with the kid and you're going to read a book. Now, I recommend that the kid picks out the book, because most of us have lots of books around the house. Let the kid pick out the book and, you know, bring it, and the parents, you know, the grandparents sit with the kid, and they actually start reading the book. So it helps with the bonding. It helps give you that quiet time that you can spend together with your kids that they remember. Because I can tell you, I can remember books that were read by my grandparents. I'm sure you can too, that you sat down and you did with it. You know, another thing that is important, because it's part of the teaching process, quietly the grandparents can do is, as you're reading books to them, you know, it helps them support the listening skills. Now, you and I both know that the best skill that we have learned over the years is how to listen, all right? Once you can listen, then you can start to do all kinds of things. But if we never learn how to listen to other people, you know, we just won't be the people we should be. So, you know, reading books to your grandkids really helps with the listening skills that they have. And it helps with the development of language, the cognitive, you know, the language development. It really, the words, books and words have things that the grandchildren may never have heard before. You get a chance to explain it. But another major portion of why grandparents take the time and do this every time you have your grandkids is it helps with attention span. You know, you got a key concentration and self-discipline. It helps you sit down with your kids and work with them to help them with their attention span. So you talk about the influence of grandparents. You know, just by reading a book really helps these cognitive things that will benefit the kids for years.
Yeah, and you know, you hear about different roles grandparents play. I'm a big sports fan, so when you hear athletes talk about how they were raised by their grandmother or the role that person played in their life, I think that person then takes on more of the authority figure because they don't have one. But if you're just a grandparent that goes and sees your kids, and your kids are actually doing a pretty good job raising those grandchildren, I don't think it's always good to be the authoritarian. I used to always tell my dad, don't you be the one to lecture them about that stuff, because they're not going to get mad at me like they might you. I'm their father. I'm going to have good and bad moments with them all the time. I want them to remember you for being the cool grandpa, the one that just did fun stuff with them. And I had to tell them that a lot. So I think the role you establish as a grandparent is something that kids are going to remember for the rest of their lives.
So did he hear you when you talked to him about that?
No. But he wasn't bad about it. You know, he would just be the one that, if there was a life lesson that needed to be thrown in there, because that's what he was big on. And, you know, they certainly worked on me. I mean, I think about things he told me all the time, but kids don't perceive that the same way. I watch my kids, my younger kids, you know, they're down to just a grandmother now. But I see how those interactions affect them. And they're fortunate that she's very loving and cares about them. But it's a very powerful dynamic that it can be a really good thing or it can be a really bad thing. And I feel bad for kids that don't get to experience that. And then when they do, maybe it's not a great experience.
Now, you talk about life lessons that the grandparents can teach you. And I'm going back to reading in books again, I guess maybe because I love books. But you know, if you think about this, the life lesson that a grandparent can do, you know, as they're reading your book, you know, before you sit down with your grandkid and start reading the book, you know, you can say to them, what do you think is going to happen in this book? Again, you're trying to expand their mind. You know, as a grandparent, you ask them the question. Let them start thinking about, you know, what do you think is going to happen in this book? You know, who are the characters in this book? You know, where is the setting? Again, one of the things we want to teach our kids is to be inquisitive, to think through, you know, the philosophy that I've had, and I know many other people have. It's not necessary to teach your children, you know, what to think. It's necessary to teach them how to think. And reading books can teach kids how to think. You know, as you're going through the book and you're talking to them, does anything in this book sound familiar to you? Have you seen anything like that? Yeah, and then obviously when you're done with the book, you want to talk to the kids and say, you know, what was your favorite part of this book and why? But again, that's the same thing that you have when you're at the end of the day. What was your favorite part of your day? But again, if grandparents can concentrate on teaching their kids through books, through reading, you know, just the inquisitiveness of life, that really is their mission.
Now, in all the articles that you've written and the other experiences that you've had, what is the role of a grandparent when they think their child is doing a crummy job or doing something wrong? Are they supposed to just be on the sidelines so they can be the loving grandparent? I mean, where does their involvement really need to go?
Well, the involvement needs to go right to the child, not the grandchildren. They got to sit down and say, I would do this. Now, most of our kids would look at us and start laughing. Say, yeah, it's my kid. It's my turn. I can do it. But yeah, you know, I guess the way to evolve in that, because I'm sure you've seen it, that our children raise their first child a little bit differently than they do the second child. You know, that first child gets all the attention, all the pictures, and you know, they're the ones that have all the rules. And by the time they get to the second kid, you know, they've learned from the first kid that they don't have to be so strict, or they don't have to do all these things that they did with the first kid. And so I think that's the role of grandparents, is you got to go right to the source, go right to the parent and say, hey, listen, you know, I've got a little more experience than you do, but I appreciate what you're doing. So, yeah, you can't let it slide. Any grandparent that lets it slide, they're not doing their job of raising their own kids.
Well, I made a documentary film called License to Parent, and it was about the parenting problem in this country. Which, because I think that's such a problem, by the time you get down to grandkids, I mean, that's, you've now taken, it goes generation to generation. I mean, these behaviors tend to repeat themselves. I think a lot of people end up being parents that probably shouldn't be. I mean, we don't actually advocate licensing, but it's more of a metaphor of there's no requirement for this job. You need to be aware of what you're getting into. But the fact is, a lot of people don't. And so if you're not a good parent, I wonder, how does that then, once your kids are having kids, you're probably going to be a crummy grandparent, or maybe you realize, wow, I did a lot of things wrong, so now I can get it right. I mean, it just seems that it's a cycle that keeps repeating itself.
I think wisdom does come with age. In other words, I think most people in my generation, the baby boomer generation, have realized that they've made some mistakes. Mistakes may have been they weren't involved in their kids' lives enough. They were so busy about building their careers and building their business and making money that, you know, they didn't show up to all the concerts. They didn't go to all the ball games, you know, of their kids. And I think those of us that are tending to be like that, and I'm included, is, you know, we've got regret for that. And so we've got to make that up. Now, keep in mind that, you know, when you're looking at your grandkids, they're only young ones. We've only got 18 years to make an influence on that. And these decades go by fast. That's two decades. And, you know, the many decades I've had, they just fly by. So you only have so much time to really influence these kids. Because once they turn 18, they do their own thing. You know, they may remember the grandparents. They may not. You've only got a couple of decades to do that. And along the same line, you know, the future is unpredictable. You and I may be here today, but we could be gone tomorrow. So you have a limited time, and you've got to take advantage of each day, because you never know, yeah, especially with what we've gone through in the last 18 months. You know, many of us disappeared. And so you've got to be able to take advantage of, you know, let's take advantage of today. Let's worry about what's going on today, because we may not be there tomorrow. So we've got to become part of the routine. You know, whether it's a routine where you live in the same area and you're involved with them on a dinner, or that's great. Or if you live in other areas and do something like I did, where you get them involved in their interests, you got to be part of the routine of these kids. Otherwise, they forget you, because, again, they got plenty of other things on their mind, not rap to get to the grandparents. So you have to be an influence. And so you can't be afraid to initiate. You've got to go in there and, you know, reach out to these kids, because you got a limited time. So, you know, a lot of us older guys have regrets that we weren't there for our kids, but maybe we can be there for the grandkids.
Yeah, I think you can see by their actions. I mean, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, while all my friends were going out on Monday nights to watch Monday Night Football and drink, I would have dinner with my grandmother every Monday night, and not out of a sense of obligation, but a sense of I really enjoyed that time. And so, you know, I mean, your kids with so many things that, or grandkids, so many things they could be doing, if when they get to that point where they actually want to be around you, that can probably be a pretty amazing feeling.
That's priceless. Think about it. When they want to be with you, that's what it's all about. That's what life is all about. Is when it's all said and done, no matter how much money you make or don't make, it's your legacy that you leave.
And yeah, you don't want to become one of those dinosaurs.
That's right. Right. You know, everybody wants to leave the same legacy that your grandmother left you.
Yeah, those are huge shoes to fill, but it's a great thing to look back on. So, you know, the premise or the idea behind my podcast is to talk about people, introduce people that are doing something in their life or their job to help move the world, make things better for other people. And I clearly see the way you are doing that, and I applaud you for it. What advice would you have for somebody who has an idea or a thought of something they think they want to do, but they're just, for whatever reason, they're too overwhelmed and they don't do it? What would you tell the aspiring entrepreneur?
Well, you know, I guess, and let me first address entrepreneurs and families, is when you love, you know, you will teach others how to love. So you've got to show that. You've got to be open. You've got to be able to show others that you care and you love. Now, as far as other aspiring entrepreneurs, there's an interesting statistic that's been going on since our Revolutionary War. And this is in every single generation from then to now, 10% of the population are true entrepreneurs. It doesn't vary. It's not like one generation has 8 and another one has 12. It's 10% of the population, of each generation turn into entrepreneurs. Now, you know, a lot of us people want to be entrepreneurs, but those that actually take the plunge and take the chance and make that goal, it's only 10%. So what you want to do is just take that chance. You know, what you and I have probably learned over the years is you learn more from failing than you do from success. So you want to make sure that if you've got that gut feeling and you think that you've got a better idea, you know, just do it. It's something you should do, because some of them you're going to fail. We just do that. But, in the long run, you're going to be a winner.
Yeah, the resume list of things that I failed at is probably longer than the things that I've succeeded at. Like I told you, I've written 2 children's books and they're just getting dust on the shelf. I mean, I've maybe sold a handful of them. I went and read them at my kids' schools. But, you know, if you have a book idea, that's a daunting thing too, because you have to pay to get the illustrations. No publisher is going to touch you unless you have some amazingly revolutionary idea that's going to set the children's book world on fire. What would you advise an aspiring children's book author?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, when I had 4 of the grandkids here, I think 10 days ago, and the oldest is Olivia. She just turned 9. So one night she grabbed the book and grabbed her 3 younger cousins, and they went underneath my desk. They didn't know I was pretty close to them. And she started reading this book to these kids. And, you know, because they were all in the book, Levi said, that's me in the bathtub. And Jackson says, that's me with my dinosaurs. And so that kind of stuff, you know, whether I sell a book or not, that is worth it. You know, at the same time, Olivia, for her class, they had to pick out a book and dress up as the main character and read the book to the rest of the class. Well, she picked up this book. And on the page where she's with at the zoo, she's wearing a pink dress. So she found her pink dress. She jumped on the, grabbed the book, and she read the book to her class with her pink dress on, just like she's a character from the book. Yeah, no money can do that for me. That's the best thing can happen to me. You know, whether I sell a book or not, if these kids got into it, that is worth all the time I've invested.
Yeah. I mean, every now and then kids do something or say something that makes you go, All right, maybe I'm not doing too bad a job.
You're absolutely right.
I just wish there were more of those moments. So anyway, Gramps, Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time today. How do people find the book? How do they find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so the book is I Don't Want to Turn Three. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Target or about 100 other sites on the internet. And you can get a hold of me at GrampsJeffrey.com. My site is GrampsJeffrey.com or I Don't Want to Turn Three.com. And I encourage, if anybody wants to talk to me about, you know, either business or books or kids, my email is GrampsJeffrey@gmail.com. I'd love to get in touch with you and talk with your audience.
Now, does it say Gramps Jeffrey on your driver's license?
No, it does not.
Have you thought about that? Am I just giving you an idea?
Yeah,
go down and legally change your name. Yeah, that's. But I didn't make any money off the idea, so that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
All right, Gramps. Hey, thanks again, and everybody, check out the book. It's great, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, George. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for joining me today on the Move the World podcast. We were talking about children's books with Gramps, and I've written a couple of them that are out there somewhere on Amazon if you're interested in checking them out. One is called I Hate That, and the other is called Boris the Donkey, I Want Something Better. You can also go to movetheworldfilms.org and see both of my documentary films, and all the past episodes to our podcast are on there as well. Thanks again for your time and taking the time to listen. I'll see you next time.